Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. Thank you for joining me for today's SMIE Consulting Midweek Roundup. Today, February 6, 2019, we're coming to you to discuss three issues in international ed and social media that crossed our news feeds this past week. On the international ed side, there are certainly two that jump off the page as some of the more noticeable ones in the last week to 7 days. And there's going to be a continued fallout from both of these as the days and weeks continue. So I want to take this time to introduce the topics that we'll be discussing today, but also what we do here at SMIE Consulting. So we've been doing these weekly chats, live chats on Facebook since July this year. And we found that these are great ways to get the message out about kind of our take at SMIE Consulting on the key issues of the day related to international education and social media. And we hope to provide some food for thought for institutional members that might be responsible for social media on their campuses and how these topics can be leveraged perhaps internally to help you develop your international student enrollment strategies more fully. So what are we going to be talking about today? Well, the first and foremost topic on the agenda for those who have been in international ed for at least the last 3 or 4 years, you may remember a similar story that popped on the news wires about 2 years ago, 3 years ago now, at the University of North New Jersey, which was, in effect, Department of Homeland Security institution was set up with full accreditation that was basically a fake university designed to pull in and attract agents that were looking to bring students into the United States or from other institutions on a pay-to-stay scheme that allowed them to be in F1 status, attend this institution in name only, and really allow them to work and continue to do that until they didn't need it anymore. So that was in 2016 when the University of North New Jersey first broke under the Obama administration, which had been in operation for 2 or 3 years previously to kind of gather momentum, establish real presence online and a physical structure in an office park. Something similar happened with the University of Farmington, set up starting in 2015, again under the Obama administration's Department of Homeland Security, that has led to this University of Farmington basically copying the model that University of North New Jersey pursued. They had active websites, social media presence that was being continually updated, and was used to attract these agents that would be bringing, according to some news reports, up to 600 potential students to the University of Farmington to enroll and pay tuition fees without actually attending any classes, and only using that opportunity of going to Farmington to secure work permission through CBT eligibility. And this is something that I know I'm posting a couple of the links to stories that have popped up recently. There's the Chronicle story and then the Inside Higher Ed story. I'm also going to be putting the Pi News up here. And the Pi News, and interestingly, I wasn't expecting this out of US News, their education section, US News and World Report's education section, but they've also come out with similar, quoting some of the same folks on this issue, that have basically considered this fake university sting to be something akin to another potential problem for international students, something that hurts the reputation of the United States, that is going to really negatively impact future prospective students that are looking at the U.S. I want to step back for a minute because I think there's a lot of hyperbole here because when we talked about University of North New Jersey, the predominant group of students that were impacted in this are folks that were impacted in this were Indian and Chinese students that were apparently at University of North New Jersey or on University of North New Jersey documents allowing them to work. Something similar, and it's actually a much more well-defined group of Indian students this time around again, and one Palestinian student that were the students that are caught up in this. The actual bad actors, the agents that have recruited these students to come to University of Farmington, there are eight initially that have been arrested, and they've apparently just pled not guilty to those charges. Today, we'll see what happens with that. Obviously, watch this space for future editions of this podcast. We'll talk about that. But what we're seeing is, and we'll cover this more in depth next week, is the kind of a reaction to this fake university again. This is something that, again, was started in the Obama administration with the University of North New Jersey, and also the University of Farmington first began their operations in 2015. So, again, both under previous administrations, but they're now being labeled with this, these actions are being labeled as, oh my gosh, it's going to be the end of the world now, it's further damaging U.S. reputation, when in reality, these kind of conversations weren't happening 2 years ago, 3 years ago, when the University of North New Jersey first broke. So it's curious to see how the media are certainly playing it, and the way another outlet that share the link to that article from the Daily Beast was actually just a pure hyperbole and politicization, just calling it the roundup of undocumented immigrants as the real target of this investigation. What I will say that is different this time around is that the students that, or so-called students that are impacted by this, that have come, paid tuition fees at an institution that they are not attending, not taking classes at, but have an I-20 that allows them to work through CBT. Those students in the University of North New Jersey situation certainly were not the targets of the investigation. They were forced to leave the country, and I don't think there are some that tried to transfer to other actual institutions. But the problem is, with that group, the students weren't really the focus. But it seems to be the case that, I'm not sure, they're certainly not in the eight that were already arrested, but it sounds like there are a number that have been detained by ICE, of these students that had come to the U.S. to work through this University of Farmington institution, fake institution. So, it's curious that the students this time around are being a little bit more targeted, it seems, and even though the agents are the ones who have been arrested, right now the students are probably in deportation hearings will be going through deportation hearings shortly because, frankly, they don't have, and some of the reports say that the DHS officials say they knew what they were getting into because they were paying tuition fees to attend a university that didn't require them to go to classes. Doesn't sound a little bit fishy. What is very telling about this is the students that have popped on the radar for the ones that are impacted by this University of Farmington are ones from, as we've been talking about on this podcast for a while, is there's a greater preponderance of Indian students coming to the U.S. from Hyderabad, through that consulate coming to the U.S. And they were certainly the greater majority of students that were caught up in that University of North New Jersey sting a couple of years ago, 3 years ago, and it seems to be the case that same group from Telangana and Andhra Pradesh, the students from those two states in India are the ones that are directly impacted by this new sting. So what does that tell us? That those students obviously have an interest in coming to the United States, but those students are motivated perhaps not by the educational value of coming to the U.S. The ones at least that are caught up in this scheme are certainly more interested in working than actually going to school or getting a degree. So it's a very complex web of details that are still yet to be worked out. But I'm really curious to see where this goes because there's a lot of fallout that's yet to happen on this, and I really hope that the students that are impacted don't get certainly the blacklisted label that unfortunately will probably fall down on them as a result of this, of their participation in this scheme. But the real focus should be on getting rid of the bad actors that brought them to this institution, or that were paid money to come to this institution. And those have been arrested. They're quite not guilty, but we'll keep our eyes on that and how that develops. But the whole idea, and this is something that's addressed in the U.S. News and the Pine News article, is that this will be this fake university thing is something that's going to hurt hurt the U.S.'s international student numbers in the future. We're already in a down cycle now as it is, so this is just going to add salt to the wound, so to speak. So what happened here, and we'll certainly see more of this as the case unfolds, is that you're seeing the question some people are raising is that these students were entrapped, that they didn't know what they were, that they weren't going to be attending schools, that they were getting the CBT as a benefit of their status, of F1 status that they were paying for, so to speak. And it's something I think it's symptomatic of a larger problem, frankly, in international education, where you have institutions that are seeing dollar signs and are seeing international students as a way to build their numbers up and build their bottom lines. And there are institutions that are doing things outside the norm in terms of degree programs. And that those are certainly encouraged and certainly to be commended. But what we're seeing, though, is some institutions that University of North New Jersey and certainly University of Farmington have done is set up where the way the regulations are set up, that does allow for CPT for students that are coming to the U.S. on degrees, if they're transferring in, or whether they're coming new from overseas. If they're coming in, the institution that they're applying to has established that internships or work experience is a clear and integral part of the curriculum, that it is allowed under the regulations. Depending on how you interpret clear and integral part of the curriculum, or required part of the curriculum, clear and integral, or integral and required part of the curriculum, I think is the language in the regulations, that if an institution wants to set it up so that that new students coming in, particularly international students coming in, can have a work experience right away before they actually take classes, there are a previous institution I worked at that this was something that there was a group of students from already were in the U.S. working on an OPT experience another institution from a certain city. They were coming to our institution to do an MBA program and were looking to continue their employment and just attend a class here or there. And their employment, they were expecting it to be full-time through CBT. And we corrected, there wasn't anything in our curriculum that we read as clear as an integral and required part of our curriculum, particularly for MBA. And certainly, typically at the undergrad level, you're not allowed to do CBT right away, but at the graduate level, potentially the way the regulations are written, you can. So this is a problem because there are institutions out there, and I'll name names. Campbellsville has been articles about that over the last 3 or 4 months. Campbellsville University in Kentucky, they've experienced huge growth in their international populations. And what they're doing is they have new students come for a month or 3 weeks or 2 weeks of classes, intensive on campus, and then they go work for 6 months to a year, and then they come back, or a semester or a year before they come back. To finish their degrees. So they've experienced hundreds and hundreds of growth in their international student numbers, particularly through this kind of a program. There are some threads I've seen on the NASA listservs that may seem to indicate there's some maybe disquiet over that happened in this past week, disquiet at Campbellsville that for students now looking to transfer out, perhaps because they feel something like Farmington is going on there. Obviously, Farmington is not an accredited school, and Campbellsville is. Farm Tombstone Real School, it had accreditation, and that's another piece of the puzzle here that obviously DHS has control over that through the accrediting bodies that they allow to accredit institutions. But Campbellsville University is a fully accredited Middle States, I think, maybe North Central, probably Middle States association. They are, but internationally, they're taking some liberties, in my opinion, with curricular practical training regulations. So it's going to be interesting to see how this develops and where this story goes from here. Now, this story obviously will have legs that will continue for weeks, I'm sure, as more details come out. One detail that I'm quite interested to find out is where the students that were wrapped up in this, and apparently some reports are saying 600 individuals came through the University of Farmington to have this work experience. But what I'm curious about is how many of those are internal U.S. transfers from other institutions because they were seeing opportunities to work right away, or how many of those are actually ones that came direct from overseas? Because that's the piece that I'm a little unsure of, because certainly the press in India is all up in arms about this because of the number of the students that are affected are from the Hyderabad, Andhra Pradesh, Telangana region. But it's also a bit of a challenge, because if they're coming direct, they're also going through the consulate in Hyderabad to get their visas to come. I don't know how many of these are actually coming initially on University of Farmington documents, I-20s, but certainly I would assume the majority are from within the United States. But that's just my take on that. I'd like to see more, find out more about what's happening there. The next story that we'll cover is one that I think is symptomatic, unfortunately, of what we're seeing in higher ed circles these days. There's a lot of attention to words that professors use, words that students can or can't use. And I think there's professors are under a lot of pressure to toe the line on certain things. And we're seeing politicians getting their hands dirty on some things that they clearly are not appropriate. So what we're seeing, as we see with the governor in Virginia, but what we're seeing here is a situation down at Duke University where you had a professor in biostatics, that she's actually the graduate programs director in the biostatics department at Duke University, that not just once, but twice in a matter of 11 months, sent out emails to international students, basically criticizing them, and in particular Chinese students, for their use of their native language, particularly Chinese, in their conversations with each other in class and in campus buildings where the courses are offered. There's three different articles that I'll be posting the links to. One is an Inside Higher Ed story, basically titled "Telling Students Not to Speak Chinese." Then there's another that's national perspective from the Washington Post that also uncovers this particular issue. And the Washington Post article basically leads with a Duke professor apologizes for telling Chinese students to speak English on campus. And certainly the professor is certainly contrite about the fallout from this, that she says she deeply regrets the hurt her email had caused, not her intention, and just being supportive of all the students that are there to pursue their master's degree in biostatistics. So what we find from that article, from the Washington Post article, is obviously the professor being contrite and apologizing. But what you don't see is this is something that actually began over almost a year ago now, where a third article I'm posting a link to now is coming out of Duke University from the independent news organization at Duke called The Chronicle, not The Chronicle of Higher Ed. It's entitled, "Letter, Try Welcoming International Students, Not Shaming Them." The author of this article is actually a fifth-year doctoral student at Duke, not in this department, but I don't think it was in this department. But this author actually relates that this started back in February of 2018, so almost a year ago, on February 28th. The student, all the master students in this biostatistics program received an email from this professor where she singled out international, in the example of the author, singled out international students and expressed disapproval on behalf of many Duke biostatistics faculty regarding their practice of conversing in their native language while on break. Faculty, she claimed, viewed students who chose not to speak English during private interactions as unprofessional and as not taking their academic exchange seriously. Whew, okay, that's a little heavy. That was followed up in the most recent email that came out on the 29th of January this year, 25th of January this year, that the second email, again, explicitly requesting enrolled international students speak English 100% of the time when you are in HOC, the building where their classes are, or any other professional setting. And this is, and she's apparently giving this message on behalf of the faculty, but she is director of the graduate program for this biostatistics, apparently. And she's since been removed from that position. But the student, I believe it's an international student, has remarked is that we're basically shaming international students by singling them out like this for speaking English. There's a natural fear or reluctance or anxiety humans have, I guess, when they don't understand something. And in this case, when professors don't understand what students are saying, they maybe take it to the wrong extreme, thinking, oh, they're talking about me, or they're talking badly about the program. Not necessarily that they're just communicating with each other, because they're from the same country, they speak the same language, and it helps them understand perhaps what happened in the classroom or what is happening with an assignment much better when they can converse in their native language. And so it's really, really sad to see this, because international students are coming to the States. The English is not their first, in almost all cases, English is not their first language, and certainly American English isn't going to be their first language. So they've made the effort to learn our language in addition to mastering theirs, and probably one, two, three other languages as well. And they're being treated basically as second-class citizens because they're not using English. And that's something that I think is a black mark on higher education when situations like that happen. It's very disturbing to see that in this day and age, and maybe not surprising in the political climate we're in, but certainly it's not something that we need to see on campus, given what university campuses are supposed to be. So particularly at a highly regarded school like Duke. So. Let's hope this is a one-off, but you never can tell with these kinds of situations. So, do want to thank you for getting online today and watching this podcast and this live chat here. Apologize for my voice today; got a bit of a sinus infection, so it's making me sound like I'm in a tunnel, I'm sure. So I apologize for that. So this Duke story, certainly there may be additional follow-up, but my guess is it's going to be swept under the carpet very quickly. But maybe serve as a cautionary tale, frankly, for institutions that maybe have similar issues that come up on our campuses. That's one that hopefully won't happen again. So I will certainly keep our eye on that and see if anything develops there. But certainly these kinds of issues, when they do happen, if there is an open environment on campus where these kinds of topics are discussed freely, rather than just swept under the rug, that's the best environment where these things can happen. Expectations, frankly, are a piece of it, not just for international students, but for faculty, particularly in disciplines that are going to be heavily populated by international students. I think that was the point of this last article that I posted from a fifth-year PhD student at Duke, that, hey, these students are, in some of the programs, they're the majority, greater majority of students in that program. So it's a matter, frankly, of convenience for the students to be able to talk, and maybe efforts need to be made by faculty to be more engaging with students in that respect, rather than just painting them all with a broad brush that it's unprofessional to be speaking your own language in professional settings or in class. So certainly that's hopefully a cautionary tale for other institutions. Lastly, I'll finish with one of my favorite topics and one of my favorite sources on all things digital, social, and mobile in the world. It's a group out of, based in the UK, but they have offices around the world now called We Are Social. And this group is really, has been on top of it for the last 5 or 6 years now in terms of their analysis of global trends, and they do a lot of data compilation on reports that are actually partnered with Hootsuite now. Digital in around the world in 2019, the article that I've just posted a link to. I post this one because I don't always do a social media or digital web-based article during these as a focus of these chats. But I do make an effort, certainly in the newsletter, that those of you who are also following me, following SMIE Consulting on our newsletter, you can subscribe to that. I'll just post a link to the most recent edition. I post links to social media stories as well as international ed stories in that newsletter. And sometimes I'll pull out one of those social media stories for this section on the live chats. And this one in particular is I think, very telling for me because you see, on from the We Are Social folks, the data that they collected, and they do a great job of displaying it as well. But we're now at a world population on Earth of over 7.6 billion people. Of those 7.6 billion, 5.1 billion have mobile phones, unique mobile phone users. Over half of the world population, about 57%, are now also have internet access. Of that, and then of the world population, about 45%, that's 3.4, 3.5 billion people, are active social media users. And of that group, of the world population again, 42% are mobile social media users. So in many parts of the world that have jumped the digital divide, have gone from no phone to a mobile phone, and skipped over landlines altogether, or gone from no internet access to mobile internet access and skipped over the desktop, those folks are now just as likely to be on social media as when they're on their phone as they are online from their desktops, even more so. In fact, I know it's more so. More people are accessing the internet from mobile devices than any other device than desktops in the world. So there are huge jumps here. We're talking about 9% jumps in internet users in a year from 2018 to 2019. There are 2% jump in mobile users. We're probably getting close to saturation there. We're now talking about 10% growth year on year for people using social media on mobile devices. So 10% growth over almost 300 million people more are using social media on mobile devices. So great data from We Are Social, and they break this out and they have the reports that you can download, and certainly you can see internet penetration by world region, device usage in different regions, mobile share of total internet time, some really great data by country on time per day using the internet, most popular websites, and social media channels in particular countries. So some fantastic data here, and I really just encourage all of you on the university side to get into this and find out what platforms are being used in different countries. Are you using Messenger apps yet for your communication with your prospective students? Are you using specific social media channels that in China, obviously we all know about the different platforms they have, but are you looking at other things in other countries that might be unique to those countries for your outreach to your prospective student audiences? So hopefully this gives you some food for thought moving forward. There's always going to be more to consider, but we're looking forward to hearing what you have to say in the weeks and months to come. Please do feel free to get on to our newsletter, subscribe to that, and we'll be happy to add you to the list. I'm also putting up some images from our website, smieconsulting.org. Some great free resources there, past presentations, the podcasts of this, also our newsletter archives there. blogs that I'm responsible for are listed there as well. And if you are on the podcast and you'd rather just hear me instead of seeing me, you can subscribe on all your favorite platforms from iTunes to Google Play, Stitcher, Podbean, or even Spotify. So we're on each of those platforms. So hopefully you can be catching up with us on past editions of this Midweek Roundup or the newsletter, and we look forward to connecting with you again in the coming weeks. So thanks for joining us, and have a great day.